Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This afternoon, we'll take you live to Boko to understand the security situation there. We'll also tell you why you've been experiencing intermittent power supply, because there's an explanation coming from Gridco. We have that conversation also coming up this afternoon. But we'll start with the protection of our public purse. Now, the Public Accounts Committee, or PAC, serves as a fundamental body in parliamentary oversight, scrutinizing public spending and ensuring that funds allocated by government are used effectively and transparently. Now, this afternoon, we'll explore the PAC's work, specifically focusing on its role in investigating and addressing cases of misappropriation and inefficiency within the public sector. Now, who is best to, you know, discuss this matter than the chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, James Kluche Abeji? We are privileged to say that he joins me here in the studio. Mr. Abeji, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You are doing good.
By the grace.
You've been in and out of the country.
Yeah.
Touring almost everywhere. Yeah. And the last time I checked, you were in the Ahafo area.
Yeah, we have four venues for our work. Tamale, Sunyani, Ho, and Takoradi.
And these regional tours are different from usually what you do in Parliament, where you invite.
Yes, the regional tours are meant to for the committee to work on four reports of the Auditor General. The report for the district assemblies. There are two for the district assembly. Their own IGF revenue, how they spend it. And then the common fund, which is allocated to them, how they spend that money. So these two funds are treated separately by the Auditor General. Then also the report for the pre-tertiary, that is the senior high schools, the nursing training colleges, then the teacher training colleges. These are also in a separate report. Then we have the report for the Tenka universities.
Right.
So these four reports are treated in the region. Now, the purpose of that, one, to bring the work of the Public Accounts Committee closer to the people.
Right.
So that at least what they see on television, they can observe it if they are free to come and sit in and listen to the proceedings of the committee. That is one. The second one is to try to minimize cost to government.
In terms of them coming to Accra?
Instead of all of them moving to Accra with their per diem, the fuel allowance, transport, everything, if the small members of the committee go there, it reduces the cost to government. And it's been effective since we started this proceeding by the previous chairman of the committee. They started it, and I also continue. So that is why you will be seeing us in the regions.
In the regions.
Yeah. So we zone the whole country into four. So in the Tamale, we'll do five regions. Northern, Northeast, Savannah, Upper East, Upper West. And then in Sunyani, we'll do another five regions. Kumasi, and that is Ashanti region, Bono East, Ahafo, and Western North.
Right.
Then in Ho, we'll do four regions. That is Volta, Greater Accra, Eastern, and OT. Then the Takoradi is only Central and Western region.
All right. Yeah. We'll come back to deal with some of the concerns that came up. I'm more particularly interested in the comments we've been hearing from the assemblies and the fact that sometimes they are not even in control of their own expenditure. Decisions are taken in Accra. Contracts are given to, you know, persons. And then before they realize, whatever is allocated to them is taken over by these companies. And of course, this recurring issue of, you know, lecturers on government scholarship, and then when they complete, they don't even come back to serve, and they give all manner of excuses. We'll come back to that. But let's start from Accra. Now, you set out to clear all outstanding reports of the Auditor General.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how far you've come in addressing this matter.
As we speak, the committee is working on the reports of the 2023 report of the Auditor General.
Right.
You know, we work on the report of the Auditor General. So if the Auditor General doesn't report in a particular year, we cannot work on it. So before the committee, my committee took over in 2017, there were about 5 years backlog of reports.
Unscrutinized reports.
Unscrutinized reports. Mm-hmm. So
every year the committee sat.
Yes, because we started not at the time that Parliament started working in 1993. Mm. And then the committee started working around 2000. So there were backlog of reports, which the committee started to work on. And the work of the committee is such that by the time you finish working on 1 year report of the Auditor General, that year's report is also produced by the Auditor General.
Right.
So you clear one is added.
There's more coming.
So you are at the same point without moving forward. Because the Auditor General presents the traditional report about 8.
Right.
I've mentioned 4 reports. Then we talk about the Consolidated Fund.
Right.
We talk about the MDA report, which we usually work on in Accra here. That is the ministries, departments, and agencies. Mm-hmm. We also talk about the public boards and corporations.
Right.
They are also in one report. If you see the volume of the report is big.
In fact, I have most of them.
Yes. Then you talk about the reports on the foreign exchange receipts and payment, mm-hmm. which are 2 in a year on the Bank of Ghana's foreign exchange transactions. Then you also have some other reports which are performance audit reports.
Yeah.
So in a year.
Like the GET Fund, the school feeding program, there's also the pre-tertiary.
Exactly. They work on all those things which are separate from the traditional report which are produced every year. As for the performance audit reports, it depends on which sector or which area the Auditor General decide to work on. Mm. So these 8 reports, by the time you finish working on them, another set of 8 reports have come in. So you need to take a strategy to be able to speed up in your clearing of the area. So what we did as a committee is to decide that for every year, we try to clear 2 years' reports.
Okay.
So if you clear 2 year report and only one is added, at least you are moving forward a step ahead of the report. So that is what we did. And COVID also came in 2020, that delay. So it affected our work. We would have finished clearing the arrears probably by 2022 or last year. But because of COVID, we could not sit on some of these reports. So that also delayed us a little bit. So immediately after COVID, every year we go around twice. So we do 2 years report. That is how we're able to do that. So now.
So now as you speak, you are dealing with 2023.
We are doing 2023.
Meaning what, we have no backlog?
We have no backlog. So as we speak, the traditional report, the last one is 2023, which we are working on now. We hope, the committee hope that we'll have a space to present our report before
before
House
the
finally
of this parliament.
Is dissolved.
Because you spoke about COVID, I don't know whether from the position of the Public Accounts Committee, there's finality to the COVID expenditure.
No, there's no finality. In fact, those are one other report which also come in,
from the auditor
which
general.
Also add to the workload. Mm. So as we speak, the report we are working on include the COVID report. Include the COVID report. In fact, I have invited, that's one of the challenges of the committee. I've invited the NITA and the Minister of Communication to come to the committee to provide some information. They refused to do so.
NITA, what is their relationship with COVID?
Yes, during COVID time, they claimed to have spent about $17 million under the Minister of Communication.
To do what exactly?
To provide workstations where civil servants can sit at home and work. $17 million.
$17 million.
Yes. It's 16 point something, so close to $17 million was spent. And this issue came up when we're dealing with the COVID report. So we needed more information to be able to establish the authenticity of that transaction. The NITA, I invited them, they refused to come.
You invited them through the Minister for Communication?
Communication, yes.
So in
they appeared first. Mm-hmm. And when, during interrogation, we realized that we needed more information to be able to know that expenditure actually take place. Mm-hmm. Whether the services have been provided, where the civil servant utilized those services, where $70 million was spent. Mm. They refused to come.
And what explanation did they provide?
They did not even give any explanation. When they appeared, I listed the equipment, the information document I wanted. Give it to me. And my clerk wrote officially to NITA to provide. They refused to come.
What is the minister saying about this? Because NITA is under the communications ministry.
They have not even come to the committee to give any explanation. So for my committee, what we're going to do is to report on this to Parliament.
And say what?
That we have invited the Ministry of Communication, that is NITA, through the Ministry of Communication, to appear before the committee. They refuse. And for this Parliament to take decision whether to cite them for contempt or not. That is something that should be done. Because the committee do not have that powers to that extent.
To that extent. But even though you may not have the power to that extent, do you have the power to verify, in the absence of them providing the information that you require, or until you get the answers, you can't verify to establish whether indeed the $70 million went into tangible spending or not?
The information we had so far, if they are not able to provide additional information, we can conclude by saying that the money was paid, but the services were not rendered.
The workstations were not provided?
No, they were not provided. Because that's one of the information that we wanted. They said they provided 300 workstations.
Across the country?
Across the country.
And you can't point to even one?
No. So that is why they are not able to even come back to the committee with the information that we wanted. So once the information are not there, we'll conclude by saying that they have not provided the services, yet the contractor, whoever, received the $70 million.
Okay. Is that the only concern with the COVID?
That's a major concern about the COVID. Now, we also established that out of the about 21 billion Ghana Cedi that were received from COVID, only 11.5 or 0.6 million was actually spent on COVID-related issues.
And the rest went into what?
The rest went into budget support. In fact, the rest went into payment of salaries of workers on government payroll. The rest went into payment of transfer of money to the common fund for disbursement to the district assemblies. Those are all COVID monies.
But that's illegal. That is not illegal.
Yeah, that is illegal. Because you claim that you needed this money for COVID. Now, the position
salary payment could also be a line item for COVID.
No, you see, with COVID or without COVID, government must pay salaries. We are talking about COVID expenditure.
Right.
The argument you are making, the point you are making, was their position that
we use
part of the money to pay salaries because of COVID. That during COVID, we did not generate enough revenue.
Yeah, because revenue did not come in as much as perhaps they wanted.
It will shock you.
That's the reason why they used.
No, it will shock you to realize that GRA claimed that in a year of COVID they have exceeded their targets. So you can't say that revenue didn't come in. If your target is to collect X amount of revenue, and you say you have exceeded it, then revenue actually came in. You understand the point? So why do you use the money that you have received for COVID to pay salary? Now, one of them is they use the COVID money as a seed capital for the Development Bank, the National Development Bank. What has National Development Bank got to do with COVID? They use the money as a seed capital for that bank.
And you are waiting to be provided with the answers to all of these questions.
They appeared before the committee. And there was no convincing answer. So we were going to report that these are expenditures that are not COVID-related. So for us, the conclusion we draw is that the actual expenditure for COVID is about 11.6 billion Ghana Cedis. The rest of the money, close to 10 billion, is spent to support the budget.
But before you went into asking the question, were you given the work plan for the COVID expenditure?
No.
There was nothing like that. So discretion was left to them
in terms
of the utilization of the money that came in?
Apart from the, you know, when the COVID started, the Minister of Finance came to Parliament to request for a 200 million from the stabilization fund,
right,
which was granted to the Minister of Finance. That was the only one where they have a work plan, that we are going to use part of this money to provide hot meal per day
for everybody,
mm-hmm, or for people in Greater Accra and Greater Kumasi. And that was them. But even if you go to the payments that they have made to caterers, mm-hmm, caterers who currently are providing school feeding, most of those caterers were the ones who provided food during COVID time. Mm-hmm. But you realize that there were no receipts covering the expenditure or the payment they made to them. They are only sign sheets that maybe somebody sat in somewhere and created a sheet and forged signature. We're not able to authenticate those signatures. Mm. But those were the support document to support the expenditure.
Right.
The question is that if these caterers are the ones who are providing school feeding, and they are recognized caterers, and when
supposed to be already a contract between them and government.
Yeah, even when school feeding secretariat paid them, they issue receipts.
Of course.
To the secretariat. Why can't they issue this receipt for the COVID expenditure? But rather a sign sheet. So after the COVID, it was an avenue for some people to make money.
And what would be your recommendation?
I have to go back to the details. I will not be able to make my recommendation. I'll go back to the details because there are various expenditure items that fall under COVID.
Okay.
So there's not going to be one omnibus recommendation.
Right.
It will depend on the expenditure.
Do you think that some people should be held accountable?
Of course.
In view
of course.
The things that
there are sectors that people need to be held accountable.
Specific individuals or groups or organizations?
Yes. Once we cite, let's say we cite a particular organization, the heads of those organizations are the ones responsible. Because those organizations are artificial human beings. The only person that can be cited is the head of that entity.
And as you are having this conversation, which entities come to mind?
First of all, I told you about
NITA.
Mm-hmm. NITA is come to mind, but if you can spend, say you have provided
$70 million,
300 work stations that you can provide the work stations, refuse to provide the information to the Public Accounts Committee, you should be cited. So I think I should leave it there.
You should leave it there. What about frontiers? I mean, there was issues with the test that was done at the airports and then the expenditure.
At least for frontiers, one thing will surprise that the company that did the frontiers work is the same company that was made to provide the workstations.
Under NITA.
It's the same company, owned by the same person.
So help me understand. So you can't go beyond NITA to demand accountability from these companies?
No, we cannot go beyond.
Because you can only deal with public institutions.
Yeah, yes, it's NITA that we can hold responsible.
And NITA is at this stage refusing to comply.
Yeah, they have refused to appear before the committee.
And no explanation.
Or not to appear. They appeared, we demanded additional information, we fixed a date for them to bring those information. The day came, they refused to come. And the information were not provided.
Let's go into the mind of the Auditor General. I'm just reading this Imani Ghana Fiscal Recklessness Index Report.
Yeah.
And Imani Center for Policy and Education, mm-hmm, collaboration with OSFAM, hosted a significant event at Tank Palace to unveil the findings of the third Fiscal Recklessness Report. The occasion attracted notable media presence and stakeholders from finance, including the Auditor General Yao, former Auditor General Daniel Ademolebo. The report scrutinized the Auditor General's finding related to the Ghana's ministries, departments, and agencies from 2021 to 2023, emphasizing the fiscal irresponsibility of certain public institutions, despite existing public financial management safeguards. Imani, senior researcher, presented the key findings, which highlighted the critical objective of the... At the end of it, key findings from the report indicate that financial irregularities remain alarmingly high, totaling 4.9 billion Ghana cedis, approximately 2.3% of GDP in 2023, while this marks a decrease from the previous assessment between 2015 and 2020. The rising trend of irregularities since 2021 poses a significant risk. The report underscores the need for government to leverage the existing IMF programs and implement new IMF. Now, the finance ministry was identified as the most fiscally reckless institution during the assessment period. Every year, financial irregularities appear in the Auditor General's report. Yeah. We appear to have accepted that every year we'll report these things. Why is it so? You have been...
Let me just use 1 minute to explain. Financial irregularity is not only one item. There are a number of areas that classify under financial irregularity. We have cash irregularity. Cash irregularity, we can even break it down to somebody who has been given petty cash, but he did not account for it. It's irregularity because it is against the established financial law. We talk about loan given to staff who refuse to pay back. It's financial irregularity. So that is one. Then we have procurement irregularity. We have contract irregularity. Mm. We have, there are about seven of them. Some of them are on earned salaries and all those things. So when we talk about financial irregularity, it is not one item, there are about seven of them.
Under it.
Under it. Mm-hmm. Now, those things appeared in the report of the Auditor General simply because the people who have been entrusted with public funds do not follow the Public Financial Management Act that regulates the conduct of their conduct in handling public financials. They do not follow it.
So why,
it
become irregular. Why is it so? I mean, yeah, that is over the years, we've passed laws in parliament.
That is a problem.
There's better scrutiny now than
before. Yeah,
yet, we all, this, I'm sure in 2024 edition of the Auditor General's report, we'll also report
irregularities. We'll get it. It will be there. Some of them are actually the doing of the officers. If an officer grants steady leave with pay to you to go and study abroad, and the officer did not put in place adequate measures to ensure that in the event that you refuse to return, the money is recovered. If the officer failed to do that, then the officer will be cited for financial irregularity because you have failed to provide or put in measures to ensure that if Elton is receiving salary whilst he's studying abroad, and at the end of the course, he refused to return to Ghana so that the country can benefit from the knowledge that he has gone to acquire, it is you who will be cited. So we'll continue to have that. Now, when we went around, some of the, especially this happened in the tertiary investment.
Yeah, exactly. Every time, and sometimes, I mean, the response is so annoying that
you
don't even understand it. You've been giving taxpayers money to go and study.
Exactly.
You refuse to come back.
Yes.
And then they now even want to dictate how they want to pay back the money.
That's right. That is a point. And sometimes we also notice that most of the people who guarantee for those people who benefit, are their peers, their colleagues, lecturers. Mm. So it is difficult for them to take hard measures on them. So we have advised that, look, forget about a lecturer guaranteeing for another lecturer. What we are asking them to do now is that if you, Elton, want to benefit, go and bring bank guarantee. Go to your banker, get a guarantee. The bank will guarantee for you that you return. In the event you fail, the bank must pay the money. And if they're able to implement that, this recommendation, then we'll not have an issue of that nature. Because if you refuse to return, the bank will pay. And for the bank to give you that guarantee, the bank might be 100% sure that Elton will return after the course. Mm. So that is one of the areas that we have recommended. There are other areas that we have done that.
But Honorable, the law may exist. You may pass resolution that will put some checks on those who approve some of these things. But you yourself alluded to the fact that sometimes they are friends. And so that they will bypass the lay down rules and then grant these things.
So we have to, if after this recommendation and the heads of the institutions continue to do the old thing, then that is one area which is also a challenge in the fight against these public financial issues. Mm. because any recommendation of the Public Accounts Committee, which goes to the floor of Parliament, it is debated, it is adopted. It goes back to the executive for implementation. Now, there is challenge with the implementation.
Yeah, because, I mean,
we do not have a mechanism.
So many reports
we do not
are yet to even be taken on the floor.
Now.
And then the recommendation
exactly.
that should be acted upon.
They are not done.
It looks like after your hearing, that's it.
That's it. That's the end. Yes. There should have been a committee established by Parliament that must do a follow-up. It is not the duty of the Public Accounts Committee to do a follow-up.
Your is to ask questions.
Yes.
And get answers and report to the plenary.
Ours is to make a report. Exactly. After that, that committee, which is under Article 187, Clause 5 of the Constitution, that committee must be established by Parliament. That must do a follow-up. So that if the auditor, the Public Accounts Committee issue a report on the report of the Auditor General, this report is presented through by motion, debated, and adopted. This must be communicated from Parliament to the appropriate ministry that must take action.
Currently, there's no such committee.
There's no such committee.
But recently, your standing orders went under some modification. You have even expanded some of the committees, and you didn't consider this very important to
be frank, I wasn't a member of the committee that worked on the standing orders. But opportunity was given to us to make some recommendation, and I did.
And yet it was not taken.
It wasn't taken.
Parliament itself is not interested in bringing finality to some of these reports.
Well, ask that question again. Since we started making recommendation, strong recommendation, for prosecution of even individuals and institutions who actually went against the procurement law, and I've always cited Ghana Cylinder Manufacturing Company,
right,
where that lady was there, the one who left at Francis SCM.
Yes.
Where unilaterally she went and awarded a contract over $26 million without going through the procurement process, which is against the law. We have made this recommendation for her to be prosecuted.
Yet,
the Attorney General did not take any action. When I queried him, why are you not prosecuting the people we have recommended? The Attorney General said, not he himself, that day it was one of his deputy who came. The deputy said that we have not been communicated to by Parliament.
And that's the responsibility of the clerk.
That's the responsibility of the clerk. So I have to ask my committee clerk to compile all those we have recommended for prosecution. The letter was drafted. It was sent to the deputy clerk, who vetted it and forwarded it to the clerk. It took more than 2 years for the clerk to endorse, append his signature.
The clerk of Parliament?
Yes, I'm telling you.
This is from the clerk to the Public Accounts Committee.
The clerk of Public Accounts Committee,
he drafted
the letter. Listing all the recommendations that demand prosecution for the attention of the Attorney General. This was sent to the Deputy Clerk to Parliament, who vetted it, then later forwarded it to the clerk himself, he has to sign.
The main clerk.
It took more than 2 years. I have to make series of complaints on the floor of Parliament. Before one of the days that I made a complaint, that I do not understand why it could take Parliament all this long to just send a letter to the Attorney General. Because the Attorney General claimed that he needed a letter communicating to him that these people need to be prosecuted.
And the clerk's explanation was what?
It was that day, the last one, I remember vividly, that I saw that the clerk stood up, and then some few minutes later, it was communicated to us that the letter has finally been sent to them.
After 2 years,
to the Attorney General. So the recent visit by the Deputy Attorney General to the committee, I asked him, do you not have a communication from Parliament that is telling you those people who or institutions that need to be prosecuted? And he confirmed that they have not received it, and they are at the preparatory stage now to prosecute. As we speak now, I don't know the stage they have reached. I hope I have an opportunity to find out before the parliament finally dissolved.
But Honorable, what bureaucratic tendencies will get a clerk to sit on a document as important as, you know, ensuring accountability? That it will take the clerk 2 years to forward that referral to the Attorney General's office.
It is because we do not have any provision in our standing orders that will compel whoever the clerk is. It's not the current clerk. It could be another clerk who even refused completely to sign. This one delayed it, and eventually he signed. But there is no provision in our standing order that might give timeline.
But do you need a provision before you act on your job?
Well, we don't need a provision, but if we have this example, then it calls for a provision to be made. Mm-hmm. So that a day will not come where a clerk will decide not to even sign it at all. So that's the challenge I have. Mm-hmm. In fact, it makes my committee push her to the extent that there is no more interest even doing the work.
For members?
For members.
Because it's like,
you have work.
And then nothing will come out of it.
Yes.
I want to ask, I'll come back to that. I want to ask, so since the inception of constitutional rule from 1992 up until now, and since the work of the Public Accounts Committee started, has there ever been any prosecution at all based on a recommendation of the
not to the best of my knowledge.
After because over 30 years of
constitutional rule. Because I think that I'm the only one who have started the referral to the Attorney General. The committee, previous committee chair, will make a general recommendation. But I have started doing specific recommendation to the Attorney General that you need to prosecute this institution for breach of the procurement law.
So why then do we sit, allow cameras into the committee room, and then show it to the entire public? Is this just flex muscles and then name and shame, and then that's it?
The idea is that the process will start from the review of the report, and it will end by punishing whoever is found guilty. Mm-hmm. That is the idea. So the people who came up with the Public Accounts Committee, not only Ghana, because it's
everywhere.
Everywhere. That is why the committee is even chaired by the opposition member. It is not chaired by a member of a party or parties that form government. Mm-hmm. It's chaired by the party or parties who are not in government. So the idea is that it will be a check on the government. Now, if we are able to follow the process where the committee made a recommendation, and this recommendation is implemented fully, it will serve as a deterrent
right.
for others not to do it. And you remember when previously the committee do not sit in public.
Right.
Now the committee is sitting in public. Now when we started first, when the committee started sitting in public in 2005, I remember I was then a young member of parliament and I was a member of the Public Accounts Committee. When we started sitting in public, before you any public officer appear before the committee, it's like, it's a shame for you to even come on television mm-hmm. that they say you have embezzled money or you didn't do something right, and you are being questioned. So that was the beginning. So at least we have achieved something that this can put some fear
in other people.
In other people that, hey, if I don't do the right thing, I'll be called to appear before the committee. And I can tell you that even still, some of them are still not happy if they are called. On Wednesday last week, I was invited by a conference of Director of Education to explain to them the use of the
Public Accounts Committee.
The GET Fund portion, the MP's portion of the GET Fund mm-hmm. in their various districts. So I went to Takoradi to go and give them a talk. And some of them told me that anytime they are called to appear before the committee, some of them don't sleep the whole night. So it's still there that the fear is there.
But then how do you respond to this claim that sometimes some of those you invite negotiate behind the scenes? Sometimes there's claim that sometimes money exchange hands so that they are dealt with leniently before the cameras.
No. You see,
have you encountered any of these?
What I've encountered is not about negotiation about money, but sometimes the district for education, district director or directors of health will talk to their members of parliament. I'm appearing before the public accounts committee. Can you talk to the chairman for me?
To do what exactly?
To take it cool on me.
No, but if you have done wrong, you've done wrong.
Yeah, so my colleagues...
The fact that you are asking for some...
Exactly. My colleagues will call me...
It means that you've done something wrong.
Yeah, my colleagues will call me and said, Chairman, this is my director. Can you help me? I said, well, I'll look at the issue. Mm-hmm. If the issue that I think that the fault is actually not from him or her, isn't it about punishing her? I will let her go or let him go. Mm. But if it's something that I will refer or make a recommendation, I will do. But I'm also a human being. Sometimes when it comes, at least you can have some soft hands on them. Mm. But it doesn't mean that what they have done wrong, you will leave it, overlook it.
But then clearly you as chairman is sometimes under pressure to bow to the overtures from even some of your members.
That's what I said, that if I look at the issue and the issue are not any controversial issues, I overlook those things because they are not something that probably are not even their fault. For instance, on end salary, let's say a person received 1 month salary and it's cited by the Auditor General that this person did not work for 1 month and receive a salary. Mm-hmm. Now, looking at the bureaucratic process of informing the controller to stop the salary, by the time the controller act on it...
You would have even taken more than 5 months already.
So there is no way you could punish the director for that. Mm-hmm. So you look at those things and you let the person go and whatever. Make sure you do it on time so that you are not cited. Those are some of the issues that I overlook.
But sometimes there's also partisan interest at play during the committee, by committee
Definitely.
Members themselves.
Definitely.
Sometimes the matter is before the committee. They are interested in knowing which period the infraction occurred.
I agree with you.
If it occurred during the MPP era, then you see the NDC guys going hard on the... When it occurred on the NDC guy, the MPP guys going hard on there. And sometimes you see committee members even protecting
openly.
Witnesses that appear before the committee.
Yes. I agree with you. That is wrong on the part of the committee. And I've been advising my committee members, like, look, what we are doing, give some opportunity to civil servants to continue to misbehave. For instance, NPP is in power today. If the report comes, and that report covered the NPP era, and you want to defend, you are a member of the committee, you want to defend whoever is cited, that person knows that, oh, when I come, the MPP members will defend me.
Right.
They will continue to do the wrong thing. If the whole thing turns and then the NDC comes to power and you do the same thing, they will exploit this situation and continue to do the wrong thing. So it is for us to come as one people to fight for the last person. So we do it to certain, but there are a time that you see members openly doing that. And don't forget that the members of the committee are politicians.
Of course.
Yes.
Mm. James Kluche Aveji is the chairman of the Public Accounts Committee. He's my guest today on The Pulse. We are looking at the work of the PSC and how best the PSC can become a potent tool to the fight against corruption and misappropriation of public funds. So, Honorable, let me just ask you, from all your time in Parliament, from chairman of the Finance Committee to now the Public Accounts Committee, and as you're about to exit, tell me, is it so easy to misappropriate or steal public funds?
It is.
Why?
It is. And one of the areas they can easily steal is through procurement. It's through procurement. Mm. You know, this government, when they were in opposition, says that they will not permit sole sourcing. But it has become the order of the day.
Right.
That is the area where they can steal money.
So sourcing is allowed under the PPA law.
Yes, under certain conditions. Mm-hmm. But those sole sourcing procurement which are granted by the procurement authority do not satisfy those conditions under which you should do sole sourcing. That is why they can do. For instance, if there's going to be a road construction, is it an emergency?
I mean, something that should have been planned, yes.
Yes.
Unless maybe there's a
why don't you go through national tendering process and select the best contractor? Why do you want to write to the public procurement authority to allow you to sole source? I just give you one example. Mm. That is the area where they can easily do. Mm. Our law allows sole sourcing, but under certain conditions. Mm-hmm. So if the procurement authority, the public procurement authority, should exert that power to examine every request that comes to them and say that, for this request, it doesn't satisfy the condition under which we can grant sole sourcing, so we'll not grant it. We'll be heading somewhere. But as soon as the request comes, I don't know the pressure and which they also
under,
and they approve. They give the approval. Mm. So it's one area that they can easily steal money, and that is the area they are stealing money.
Because most of the irregularities that we see in the report always relate to procurement.
Procurement. That is the simplest area that they can do. Sole sourcing is the area that.
How do we stop it?
That is what I said. I said it some time back. And then the public procurement authority people didn't like it. I said that if I look at the salaries of the public procurement authority personnel, it's nothing to write home about.
They are not paid well.
They are not paid well. Mm-hmm. They are human beings. They are not paid well. Yet there is a request to give approval to award a contract for $100 million. The contractor who will do the work comes to give you an envelope. And he will corrupt you because you're not paid well.
As somebody who is greedy and corrupt, no matter how much
at you least, pay that person. At least it will reduce it to a certain level. It won't be said that anything that comes, I'll accept it.
Right.
So one area is that we should look at how they are paid. Two, the appointment to that position as the chief executive or director general of public procurement authority, we should look at it again. If I am appointed by the political head of the government, and that political head, there's a request which through a sole sourcing which doesn't satisfy the condition, and that political head who appointed me gave me a call and said, work on that, what will you do?
So how should they be appointed?
We should look at how they are appointed. There are
almost everybody is appointed by the president.
Yes, so those sensitive positions must be appointed through a competitive bidding process. Advertise. Let people apply. And then you go through process. Parliament can do that. Mm-hmm. Vet the person, do that. At the end, we give it to one person. And there must be tenure office for that person. Mm-hmm. So he knows that for the period I am working, nobody can sack me. Mm. He will do the right thing. But that again calls for the situation where the former auditor general was asked to proceed on leave. Mm.
Because he had.
Even though his office is protected by the Constitution.
Right.
That this is the only procedure to go follow, just like the way you remove a judge of a court of
appeal or the Supreme Court.
Supreme Court. To remove that person, the same procedure you have to follow to remove the auditor general. But he was asked to proceed on leave. Look at the person. So with this, I think we're in a big shit.
So it doesn't look like we are anywhere close
to
addressing public sector corruption.
No, we are not. We are actually not doing the right thing. Mm. If we want to do, then if I'm the one who appoints you and I know that you are doing the right thing, I don't need to remove you from the office. If I remove you from office because you are doing the right thing, then me myself, I'm not committed to fight corruption.
But are we losing so much?
We are.
In terms of the money. Sometimes the Auditor General says that the misappropriation is at this, but this percentage is recoverable. And then I ask, are we able to recover?
Look. There are certain things that are not reported in the report of the Auditor General.
Like what?
The procurement that I've told you about. Mm. If the Auditor General goes that government wants to procure this phone, okay? And if government go to the open market to procure it, or through a competitive procurement process, this phone can cost, like, let's say, 1,000 Ghana cedis. But because through sole sourcing, one is costing 5,000 Ghana cedis, the Auditor General will not cite it, simply because there are documents to support it.
Right.
The Public Procurement Authority that has a mandate to give approval has given approval.
So should we amend?
So there is one area which we are losing a lot of money, mm-hmm. but are not being reported in the Auditor General report. It is only those that are against the law that is being reported here. This one, it is not against the law. Because the procurement authority has given the approval. But we are losing something there. So that is one area we have to look at. The Auditor General report, those infractions that he reported on irregularities, yes, most of them are recoverable. For instance, if he report that the Ghana Revenue Authority is supposed to collect, let's say, 10 million Ghana cedis from Company A. It's not able to collect it at the end of the year. It doesn't mean that 10 million is lost. He didn't collect it before the end of the year.
Right.
Probably in the following month after the end of the year, he collected it. So you see that when we invite the GRA people, they will come and say that, oh, this one we have collected 80%. This one we have collected 95%. So it is not everything in the report that are lost to government.
Okay.
There are some that are recoverable.
Hold on, but a few questions so that I can ask a few issues before we wrap up. Is there a reason why the audited accounts of ECG for 2023 is not captured in the Auditor General's report?
I think that the Auditor General, because of the volume of work, they don't audit all the government departments every year. Mm. They do some selections. So it's likely that for ECG, they did not report audit them in 2023. Mm-hmm. They will audit them in 2024.
Okay.
But there is another issue that is coming up. Mm-hmm. But the ECG is a company. So it must be governed by or regulated by the Company Act, mm-hmm. but not than the under the government, for that matter, Auditor General. Because it seems that once it's a company, the Company Act says that there must be external auditors. Those external auditors are not Auditor General staff. Mm-hmm. But there's another argument that is saying that any institution, any agency, anybody that depends on the consolidated fund, depend on money or their operations are funded in a way by the consolidated fund, that body must be audited by the Auditor General.
Right.
So let's look at it. Is ECG funded by the Constitution?
Of course.
Yes. There are sometimes you see that government procure or take loan and procure items for them to go and expand their operation by sending electricity to other areas. Those monies are not recovered from ECG. So they are in a way receiving some support from the Consolidated Fund. And by that, they must be audited by the Auditor General. Mm. So that is why that argument is there. We have not come to a conclusion. But for now, they continue to audit them. So if they don't appear in the 2023 report, they will come in 2024.
The Auditor General itself has raised issues about the conditions of service of staff of the Auditor General. Sometimes they even use their own resources in the conduct of government business. When you hear some of this and at the back of your mind, do you trust the work that they've done?
Well, I don't have any means to doubt it. Because they go to the field. Whatever they see is what they report on. If they see something and they don't report on it, I'll not be able to know. So for me, I take the work or the report of the Auditor General as the actual happening.
On the ground.
But if it is different, I'll not be able to tell. Unless I go back myself to go and do that work, and before I can realize that, oh, there is something here that you do not report in your report. Mm. So, but for now, once we don't have that mandate to go and do that, or they will not be able to.
Okay. Now, Honorable, given the current stalemate in Parliament, are you confident of finishing your work ahead of your retirement from the House? You don't even know
my
when the House is coming.
My committee?
Yes.
No, it's in doubt. I don't know.
You don't know? We don't even know when
I don't know.
The House is coming back.
I don't know. That's why earlier when I said, I hope that there will be space for me to even present my report before the House is finally dissolved.
And in
presenting, but for now, I don't know.
If you have the final opportunity to present a report on the floor and you are making recommendation, what would be your recommendation to make the public accounts more potent?
My usual recommendation, one, the formation of that committee that might do a follow-up is one. Two, I recommended earlier that the public accounts committee should be given some little power to, on the spot, refer public officials to the security agency.
But sometimes you have a police officer who you direct to do certain things.
Yes. What I did in 2021, I think so, was not based on the person's infraction in the report. Mm-hmm. It was based on the statement that person, the information the person gave earlier.
Okay.
And then, because those people came a week earlier, they told the committee something or what happened. We asked them to go and come back, and when they are coming back, they should come with the previous accountant. When they came and told the committee a different thing altogether. Mm-hmm. So you took an oath and lie. It's perjury.
Right.
So go to the police station, go and make another statement. We'll compare the three statements. That was the reason why I referred them. But even when I did that, my own colleague, he was on the committee at that time. The current majority leader,
Alexander Fayomaki.
Yes, he was a member of my committee during the time that we did that. He was after me. He said, I did not have the power to do that. So I didn't want to do it again. So if the committee can be given that power, that you can see clearly that at the sitting, somebody was actually lying. He took oath and lying. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that this person have actually embezzled the money. But you don't have the power to refer the person to the police immediately. You can only do that through the report. Mm. And it takes time, at least 3-4 months before the report is taken.
Right.
By that time, if the person wants to run away, you would have gone a long time.
Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, James Kruchavaji, is my guest here on the Pulse. Now, just like you do on your committee, when you allow public interest questions. Mm. I have loads of public
interest questions.
Those are people have been following your work in Parliament from the first day up until now that you are thinking of hanging your boots. Mm. And the first question really is asking about your verdict of the 8th Parliament. Some say that it's been too acrimonious. I mean, you've passed the least laws because you spend more time fighting than doing the work of parliamentarians.
Mm.
What is your verdict of the
8th? I've been in Parliament from the 4th Parliament up to the 8th Parliament.
So I agree
with them that this Parliament has been the toughest Parliament. The 8th Parliament has been the most toughest Parliament. In fact, it did not even give freedom to members of Parliament. Because sometimes you can be shadowed to travel, but because there is a controversial issue coming to the floor, you have to abandon your travel. Mm. You can be in your constituency, you are recalled immediately to come. It doesn't make the work enjoyable. Mm. So this Parliament has been the most acrimonious Parliament.
Some say it's been the worst. Do you agree?
No, it's not the worst. It's rather the Parliament that is testing our democracy. Mm. Because a day will come, we'll have a minority government. Mark it somewhere. Mm-hmm. A day will come, we'll have a minority government, where a government of the day will have fewer members of Parliament. Mm-hmm. We have to manage as a country. Japan, their Sunday election, the ruling party has lost majority in Parliament.
Even in the current U.S. composition?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we should prepare for that. So this is the beginning that is testing how we can cope the situation where we have a president who will have a minority in Parliament.
But we have to be doing it right. I mean, the fisticuff has become the order of the day on any contentious issue.
No, apart from 7th
the election of the speaker.
Yeah.
E-levy, the way you went last week, for example.
Last week, there was no fiscal.
Because the other side said that they decided to give you the money so that you would not do the things you wanted to do.
It's very interesting, Parliament. But I think that it's okay. It's okay. It's been the toughest, but I think it's okay.
Another public interest question that is coming in from one of the parliamentary reporters is asking, since you were removed as deputy minority leader, how did you receive that development? Do you believe you were treated fairly, given your many years of service to the NDC?
I told myself that I will not make public comment on this. And since then, I've never made public comment.
It's a public interest question.
Yeah. But my answer is that it is my party that gave me the opportunity to serve in that position. It's the same party that said, it's enough for you, go and sit somewhere. Why should I be angry? No.
You've never been bitter about it?
No, never.
But the way and manner in which...
I have never been bitter about it.
The claim is that you were not even aware, you heard it on the radio.
I actually was out of the country. The Kenyan parliament invited me to come and give a paper to their new committee on public accounts committee. So I was in Mombasa. When my clerk called me, my secretary called me, that there's a letter from me from the party office. And I said, read it to me. And eventually the outcome is that I've been relieved of my position.
The party did not even consult you before writing the letter to
no,
you.
No.
That clearly is not the right way to go. Well, for somebody who served the party from the four parliament up until now, rose to leadership position in the party.
It did not matter. It didn't change me as Honorable Abaji. Mm. It didn't change me. So what I did was I asked her to take a snap of it and send it to me, and she did. So what I did was rather to send that copy to the General Secretary to thank him that I received your letter, because it was signed by the General Secretary. Mm. I received your letter and I want to thank you. That's all. Mm. When I came back, the following week was public hearing. I went and sat. People thought that, hey, this man will change, and I did my work perfectly. And I said, I'll not make no comment because of what I've told you. That it's the party that gave me the position. Mm. It's the party that took it.
But
maybe there's a bigger position for me, which the same party will give to me. So why should I be aggrieved when they take this one from me?
But the reaction that followed from even key members of the party in parliament clearly, I mean, showed that the party did not.
Well, I think
that itself. Well,
I think we have overcome that. Mm. We have overcome that. So let's move forward.
Somebody is asking about the pressure on MPs in meeting the needs of their constituents and whether that has become a disincentive for people to go to parliament, because a lot of people leave parliament poor than they came.
It is true. It is true that the pressure from your constituent is so high that, and if the pressure, the demands comes, you find all means to give to them. Mm. To the extent that you deny your immediate family their needs. Because to you, your immediate family will not go and be destroying you in public.
Right.
But if you don't give to this outside person, that person go and be destroying you by giving you all sort of names. So you end up satisfying the outside people against your own immediate family. The demand is there, and it's becoming worse. Mm-hmm. When I entered parliament in 2005, January, we did not have this mobile network where all these issues...
Anybody can call you from anywhere.
It is unless you go to your constituency and they hear that you are in, then they'll come to you. But now, text message, WhatsApp message, calls, and the worst of it is Momo. So you can't give an excuse. Mm. Even if you're in Borg, you're in Tamale, and they're in Georgia, or Apipe, or Tajahu in my constituency, it's a matter of do a Momo to me.
And if you want to meet everything, then it's like...
You can't even meet all.
Your salary itself is not enough.
You can't meet all because your salary is not enough to satisfy all the demands. So you have to be managing. There are times Tom will come to you today, you give the letter you have to them. After some time, they come back. If you're not able to give to them, they go around and be destroying you.
In fact, the story is told, a member on your side, a senior member, told me this very interesting story, that there's this gentleman in this constituency, he helped to go to the teacher training college. That's so right. The guy has graduated, he's a teacher. Then he went to the constituency. At 4 a.m. he was asleep. Then he heard a loud, you know, knock on his door. He was thought maybe there was some security matter. He came out and he saw this gentleman. He helped to go to the training college. And then the gentleman had come to inform him that his girlfriend came to spend the night with him. The girlfriend came with a motorbike. But when they woke up and was going to escort the girl, somebody had
stolen the motorbike.
So he had come to take money from the MP to
go and buy a motorbike.
A motorbike for the girl. So I asked him, what was your... He looked at him for like 30 minutes. He just couldn't find the words to respond.
Yeah, it's true. Some going to marry a second or third wife will come to you for money. I'm going to buy a second wife. I'm going to marry a second wife, so support me.
So retiring now will give you some kind of freedom to...
Yeah, actually, I decided that I'm not going again. There is saying that no matter how good a dancer you are, you must leave the stage.
At some point.
Yes, and then the best time to leave the stage when applause is hot, high. And people still say, I should go. No, it's okay. I'm old now. At least I'm on the sea floor, okay? So the young ones to come and take over.
Right.
So I've taken that decision. And the people who came to me that they want to take over from me, there were actually 11 people. I've encouraged all of them. At the end, 8 of them went and contested, and the young man won with a different one. You saw what followed. But one interesting thing that I did that made the rest of them to accept me was that I met all of them, I told them that I am not going to vote for parliamentary primary. I'll vote for presidential, Mahama. And parliamentary, I will not vote. Because if I vote...
Obviously, you vote for one of them.
I'll vote for one of them. And there will be this debate, oh, he voted for A or B or C or D. So I won't vote. And that is what I did. Okay. And in fact, if I voted for parliamentary, probably when Adam got one difference, they would appoint Hannah to me that I'm the one whose vote is that. Because Adam is basically close to my area. Mm-hmm. And they said, I'm the one who brought him, which actually wasn't the fact because I've accepted all of them to come. So that made them to believe that I'm actually for all of them. So genuinely, Adam is the candidate. And based on that, they are all supporting now.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming through for us this afternoon.
You're welcome.
James Kluchaveji, of course, is the chairman of the Parliament Public Accounts Committee. He's got a few more weeks to leave Parliament, at least on the 7th. Of January. This is the pause. We'll take a short break and return. I'll take you to Boko to understand the security situation there. You're welcome back. This is the pause here on Joy News. And of course, let me take you to Boko because there's some disturbances there. An emergency Security Council meeting is underway in Boko in the Upper East Region following the resurgence of violence that has reportedly left at least 15 people dead. Security presence has been intensified, but what measures are needed for a lasting solution to the unrest? Let's get an update from our correspondent, Albert Sori, who is monitoring the meeting. Albert, you're welcome. So I'm just reading on our WhatsApp platform that 4 more people have died. Is it part of the 15, or this is new discovery? And if you can unmute for me, Albert.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Albert, I can hear you. So I was asking, I'm just reading that 4 more people have died, and I'm asking whether it's part of the 15 already reported, or these are new recoveries.
Yes, so this is just, these 4 are part of the number that has already been accounted for. We know about 8 who died on the high. The 15 seems to be a total number of other people who have died in the course of the resurgence of this attack. But the 4 that I was just talking about has to do with the fact that these were innocent civilians who were killed. They do not have any connection to the conflict whatsoever. Our understanding is that they were accompanying a Zongo chief from Ablekuma in Accra to attend a festival which was supposed to take place in Bongo this weekend. when they were ambushed, ostensibly because the assailants thought that they were coming into Boko to support one of the factions. It turned out that these people whose bus was fired at didn't have anybody of Kusasi or even Mapusi descent at all in the bus. Mm. Our understanding is that they were people who actually hailed from down south of the country, who were only accompanying this chief who was coming to Bongo to attend a festival which was supposed to take place on Saturday. Mm. Just before I joined you, I was talking to the paramount chief of Bongo and just confirmed this. In fact, he has told us that he has had to indefinitely cancel the festival because of this incident. So that was just by way of update. And one of the things Bongo chief was saying was that these are some of the effects of this conflict, which doesn't seem to go away, because it has gotten to the point where not only the people who are directly involved are getting killed, but people who have nothing at all to do with the conflict are losing their lives. And one thing he raised, which is worthy of note, is the fact that he was asking the people of Boko to look at it and get to understand how the families of these people who have lost their lives innocently would be feeling, and how they would see us as a people when things like this happen.
Right.
And it's one of the depressing things that have come out of this recent.
And the Security Council, what are they doing about it? Is there any new measures in place?
Yes, so we know that there is security presence on the ground. Our efforts to talk to the Regional Security Council have not yet been successful, because I keep checking with the regional minister's PR, and he says that since morning, the minister has been having a series of meetings with different groups of people. Mm. It is still even not clear to us whether that Regional Security Council meeting has been held or it is going to be held at another time. But we haven't been able to talk to the regional minister nor any of the district chief executives who are on the Regional Security Council or even the police. So we do not know what the measures are, at least officially. We have not heard from them.
So clearly the folks there are living in fear, not knowing what will happen in the next minute or so.
Exactly. So as we speak, Boko Town is almost deserted. Everyone is staying indoors. One of the things, as you see on the screen, the video of the Boko Municipal Assembly,
right,
it's one of the things that the residents woke up to this morning when some unknown people, we are told, locked up the Boko Municipal Assembly. And so the workers have not come to work. Obviously, because of the security situation, a lot of people are staying indoors, and so there hasn't been normal everyday activity whatsoever. But the municipal assembly has been locked up with all some inscriptions, notices which were written in red ink, posted on the gate of the municipal assembly, and also at vantage areas on the walls and even on the notice board, indicating that whoever these people are want a new chief, Sadio Abagre, arrested. Otherwise, in one of the notices, they said the next thing they will do is fire. We don't know whether that means they are trying to say they are coming to burn the building or it's a different sort of threat. Mm. But this is one of the things that have come up today. And a lot of the natives, the citizens of who are staying indoors, there's little to no activity on the streets.
But finally, before you go, what about movement in and out of Boko, especially for commercial vehicles that obviously have nothing to do with the conflict? Are they going about their business, or for now there's some kind of a halt in that?
Obviously, because of the happenings of yesterday, in fact, somebody circulated a very strong WhatsApp message indicating how he witnessed them pull out people from a bus that he or she was traveling in. They pulled the people out and lynched them. And so as far as travel is concerned, many people would not even be attempting to travel into or out of Boko. And as I said, the whole town is almost a ghost town. There's very little activity. So even movement of vehicles, you rarely see it. And so as far as travel is concerned, I would say that there is nothing of that sort. One of the issues we have is people who may be traveling from Bolga to Accra, because Bolga to Accra, Bolga to Tamale, or Bolga to Kumasi, that stretch is where the attacks happened yesterday. But we are told that security presence is there now. In fact, the police issued a statement this month jointly with the Ghana Armed Forces, and they indicated that they are patrolling that highway now, and they are assuring people that it is secure. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to use the stretch, so I can't tell, but this is the assurance that has been coming from the
said. All right, Albert, thank you so much, and stay safe. Albert Sori is our Upper East regional correspondent, and he's just giving us an update from Boko, where 15 people have lost their lives as a result of the renewed clashes between the two feuding factions in the chieftaincy crisis. Now, away from conflict, let's talk about power. Now, if you have been experiencing intermittent power outages, I have a reason for you. Now, brace for even more power outages, as the Ghana Grid Company confirms the current outages in some parts of the country is due to their inability to supply ECG with the power needed to supply consumers. Now, there's been some erratic power supply to parts of the country, with the minority and some analysts warning doom so may be returning. Gridco says this challenge is simply because there is no gas to power the thermal plants. Jifa Bampo is a corporate communications manager at Gridco.
So currently, Gridco, as far as we are aware, as the transmission entity and as the entity that manages the national grid, we are aware of some commercial challenges with supply in reference to gas. When we say commercial challenges, it means there are agreements, payments, negotiations that need to be done with the gas suppliers. So really, that has nothing to do with that. But the challenge is, once there is a drop in supply as a result of those bottlenecks, it affects generation capacity, and then ultimately it affects transmission as well. So for us, we are unable to provide the full quantum of the power supply that ECG would need for demand in country. And that's just because there are these commercial issues related to the gas companies and government. Those need to be addressed. Then if we get the full quantum of gas supply as we normally do, then we can address emission issues. Usually what would happen is, if Sunonasogi was operating, operating because they would have received a supply of gas. However, if they have chosen not to operate, as I understand is their decision, that I would have gone to them would just be reallocated to other suppliers who need gas for their thermal plant. So it doesn't really have anything to do with the recent outages. The current outages we all experience, including myself, is really just because we don't have the full quantum of gas supply, indigenous gas supply in Ghana, to meet our demand needs. And that is the reason why we are seeing these challenges. As soon as government is able to address the cultural issues with the gas producers and suppliers, then we should be okay. In country. So this has nothing to do with NGAS as well. It's about our suppliers in country and their negotiations and requirements from government. That has nothing to do with great coup.
Well, the ranking member on the Mines and Energy Committee of Parliament, John Jinapor, says that government is simply struggling to raise the needed funds to procure gas. The reason why we're experiencing doom so.
Well, our checks, incontrovertible, confirms that Gridco has been shedding load over the past 1 week, and that is going to get worse from today. There are two main reasons, and like Gridco put it, the first challenge is the issue of fuel. Because consumption is increased, the gas that we bequeath to this government is unable to meet the gas supply needs. And so government has been procuring light crude oil at a cost of about $40 million every month. But because of the current financial situation, government is unable to support the power sector players to procure light crude oil. And so as we speak, there is shortage of light crude oil. So even when the plants are available, because of inadequate fuel, they are unable to generate enough power to meet domestic needs. Two is that Asogle has also decided to shut down its plants, more than 500 megawatts. And so that creates a huge shortfall. So the combined effect of these two unfortunate situations has led to a significant reduction in the supply of power.
All right, that's how we end it. But the good news also this afternoon is that Ghana's foreign minister, Sheria Okobo-Ikeh, is back in the country after being elected as the Secretary General of the Commonwealth Organization. And that's a plus for the country. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. Stories on myjoyonline.com. Speaker Alban Babin rejects Supreme Court writ on vacant seats ruling and returns the document to Parliament. The Electoral Commission has also been explaining something that you need to pay attention to, plus other compelling stories on myjoyonline.com. Well, that's our show for today. Whatever you are up to in the hours ahead, I hope it's profitable. My name is Elton Bobby. Have a good evening and take care. See you tomorrow, same time here on The Pulse.